sit back, relax, and enjoy as Don Tony gives you news and reviews from AEW, NXT, and indie wrestling too.
Know what's happening in the world of wrestling without the hate and clickbait.
It's Wednesday night, Dawn-o-mite.
And now, your host, Don Tony.
All right, Jeff Hardy, as we had a feeling last week, maybe we didn't think it was going to happen this quick, but he is back in AEW, looking good, looking healthy, looking sober. Yeah, we got to tell it like it is. How many times have we said that before? This time around, all intents and purposes, the whole Hardy camp, I mean, sometimes you got to hit beyond rock bottom to pick yourself up. And let me tell you something, when we started really digging deep into the weeds as far as his DWI arrest and a couple other little tidbits that we learned, but, you get to a point where you're like, okay, do you want to get hits and views and get noticed online by putting out there some really unnecessary dirt, or do you just let it be? And, the monitoring device, everything, rehab, not only that, support from his family and friends. I think that is very much underreported, is the family and friends aspect of this. His support group was intense. And it's nice to see him back. I don't want to see him jumping off of balconies. I don't want to see him jumping off of buildings. You know you're going to get the table spot. Hopefully we don't get a ladder spot, all that much anymore. I'll tell you this much. We've talked a lot in the last episode about AEW coming to Wembley Stadium. And by the way, welcome everyone to Wednesday Night Dynamite. I am Don Tony, and it is, I almost said February. I'm still on vacation, sort of, psychologically. It's April 12th, 2023. And, I'll say this about Wembley with AEW All In. We'll talk a little bit more about it later. But, I honestly think one match we are going to see at Wembley is a retirement match. I truly believe that someone is retiring at AEW All In. Now, whether it's Sting, whether it's Goldberg, whether it's Jeff Hardy, whether it's a combination thereof, I have no idea. I am just brainstorming. But I tell you, I just get that vibe that there is going to be a retirement match in All In. And you know what? For that kind of spectacle, we don't know how much it's going to draw. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But I think we really are going to see a retirement match at All In. And let me tell you something. The emotion there is real. And Matt Hardy has been Jeff Hardy's number one cheerleader out of all of this. And, you realize also that there's only so much you can do. Matt, wish there was a magic button you could press and everything goes away. All the pain, all the suffering, all of the difficulties, the demons. But unfortunately, that's just not the case. There is no magic pill. Unfortunately, there's no prescription for that, and it doesn't come in a bottle. So to see Jeff Hardy back today, it's good. But as we said last week, and I know it's a very hard example, to use, but we tell it like it is over here. I never, ever waver from that. I think of Bam Bam Bigelow. I will never, ever forget it. To the day I die, I will never forget it. I became friendly with Bam Bam in the last 5 years of his life, and he was very, very close with the Masked Maniac. And, I know a lot of you to go back with me a long ways know the infamous stories with the eBay auctions and the stuff that Bam Bam wanted me to sell for him. But the one thing that always stuck out to me is, when Bam Bam Bigelow was away from wrestling, he was clean, he was sober, He was not so much in pain, but he wasn't happy. Every time he would return to wrestling, the demons would return, the painkillers would return, the, you know, extra. And Mass Maniac, I remember, and he's still around. If anybody wants to verify this, he will tell you what I'm saying is 200% accurate. You know, we used to be on a three-way call at least two or three times, and he would say, Scott, why do you want to return to the ring? You know, we love you, and we love to see you back in the ring, but, you know, when you go back in the ring, that's where all the problems return. He just loved it that much. And I can't help but to get those same vibes when I think of Jeff Hardy. Jeff Hardy doesn't need to return to the ring. Jeff Hardy could do a hell of a lot in wrestling without doing this to his body. So I hope to God that not only he keeps it in check, but I hope also the promoters out there keep him in a little bit of check as well. You know, there's responsibility on all ends. But right now, for the present moment, he looks good. He looks happy. He looks healthy. And I don't think we could ask for anything more. So welcome back, Jeff Hardy. That is very cool to see. Also tonight, you know, we had the return of Sting. Sting, not only did he return with a microphone in hand, but he had pom-poms, quite a few pom-poms. You know, I guess he had the wherewithal to think that MJF was going to keep using the cheerleader term. You know, a lot of predictions tonight. Best friends, hey, I'll see open. Why don't you come all the way from Japan and fight us Saturday for the tag titles? Yeah, they're backstage. And, you know, 5 minutes later, oh, the match is on. The match is going down, actually, right now as we speak. My friend Mike is at the event, and he gave me a couple little tidbits behind the scenes, which is pretty cool. But, you know, Sting back today. And I tell you, you know, I remember Sting when he was with the Ultimate Warrior. You know, I mean, those days were kind of cringe, but I remember Surfer Sting, and I remember how awesome he was on the mic. Shit, I even think of his limited days in WWE, in TNA. He is so good on the mic. And you look back at the last couple of years in AEW, and you say to yourself, why didn't Sting talk more? You know, seriously, why? Like, he shouted out tonight, Ric Flair, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, because he was reminiscing a little bit about his career and putting Darby over as well. But, you know, as I'm listening to this and I'm saying to myself, why didn't we get more of Sting on the mic the last couple of years? But it was very cool to see Sting back. I think Sting versus MJF is a possibility. But, you know, is Sting interested in the world title? No. Sting even said on the mic tonight, he's like, look, you know, my days of wanting the world championship is over and Showtime is almost over. He is teasing retirement. But right now, even Showtime is almost over for Sting. It's just begun for Darby Allin. But very, very cool to see Sting back tonight. And yeah, him pulling pom-poms out of his jacket and his pockets like he was a magician was pretty fucking funny. Because MJF has been using the cheerleader term, or Darby Allin, Sting is his father, which is not. Little bit of Cody Rhodes name dropping tonight. I don't have really an issue of it. I know a few of you DM me tonight and said, doesn't that give you a little bit of TNA vibes when they used to name drop WWE all the time? No, I don't think so. I go back to, you know, I think back to ECW in the mid 90s. And there was name drops of WWF and WCW, not all the time, but enough. And listen, if it leads into the storyline, I have no problem with it. You know, I remember it was, about a year ago where everybody got, not everybody, but a decent number of voices got annoyed that Marco's stunt was brought up in a promo, I think, by Christian Cage, even though he was gone. I even think Marco's stunt was not too thrilled about. I'm like, come on. You know, you're bringing up history to further a storyline. You know, if Sting is Darby Allin's support group, his cheerleader, well, Cody, was, you know, was to MJF, and what Sting was is to Darby Allin, and what Ric Flair was to Sting, and later Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. You know, so bringing up Cody to add legitimacy and realism to a storyline, I have no issue with it whatsoever. I know there's a lot of people online that don't like that, and that's cool. That's cool. You know, you could feel if it gets a little excessive. You know, there's no fourth wall being broken down. It, you know, Forbidden Door stuff is pretty much, you know, passé at this point. You know, pro wrestling is not what it used to be. And, you know, the future is really, really going to be interesting, how everything goes down. And speaking of that and a few other topics, I have to plug it. I have to plug it because I truly think you all will fucking love this episode. Last night at 10 o'clock, Kevin Castle and yours truly, well, I recorded a double episode. Last night, we did the Don Tony and Kevin Castle show for a little over an hour. And then after I was done with Kev, I did another hour of the Don Tony show, kind of to play and catch up a little bit. But we got into so many topics. I mean, the topics were tremendous. Go to DonTony.com and download the episode, and you will absolutely enjoy it. You'll really appreciate the conversation that we had about Jay White. And listen, kudos to everyone out there who have figured it out. We absolutely love Jay White as a wrestler. We are excited to see Jay White become a household name, you know, in the future. But the idea now that Jay White chose AEW over WWE is kind of, you know, it's a little bit ridiculous when you think about it. But we got into a lot of very, very interesting topics. And I tell you, especially coming out today, what Vicky Guerrero announced going after her daughter, Kevin and I had a very deep discussion yesterday about that Guerrero mess. And the fact that people are running to social media instead of running to the court and the cops. And too many people do that in this day and age. You get threatened. You get, you know, your family, anything. You run to social media instead of running to the court and to the cops. And I will never, ever understand. I mean, I understand it, but I will never, ever accept that. Well, they actually are running to the courts now. And that is a good thing. But we had a blast yesterday. So go to DonTony.com. Go check it out. You will absolutely enjoy it. And yes, we're trying to keep an even balance, you know, of shows here with a little video aspect to it and audio-only shows. You know, I've discussed that. I actually talked about that yesterday, so you could check out that episode. We get into it a little bit more. Tonight, we want to focus on NXT, AEW, Impact Wrestling, and a little bit of MLW. Because I'll tell you right now, you know, I'll just tell you straight out. I mean, I never thought we would kind of open up with a little bit of MLW, but I'll tell you, you know, yesterday was the last episode on Reels. You know, courting court is the phrase that I have been using, and a lot of websites have just pretended like nothing is going on negatively, but Reels is done with MLW for now. And the court case, the lawsuit against WWE is in serious, serious jeopardy because WWE, you know, asked the court to throw this out. Now, I don't have all the court details here. Honestly, I think a lot of you would fall asleep if I start reading it. You just use a little bit of common sense and you say, and remember when they filed the appeal and they're basing some of their claims on tweets, they're basing claims on assumptions. The fact that they made the accusation that AEW has not been profitable at all since it started, you know, where do you get that from? You just can't make accusations. You know, you could do that on social media. You can't do it in a court system. But Reels would like to continue a little bit of a relationship with MLW. Now, I don't want to get into a lot of the specifics because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to jump the gun with this. But, you know, I was told firsthand, because I've been talking about this situation when everybody else has ignored it. I was told firsthand that Reels is actually negotiating with MLW to have more content on their network. And MLW is pretty much going to jump at anything Reels offers them, because MLW needs to continue a TV footprint. Social media, streaming, YouTube, that's all cool and dandy, but that's not enough. And when you read those court papers and MLW talks about, oh, well, WWE has this corner and this corner and this corner, well, that's because a lot of people find it more convenient and cheaper to just stream on YouTube, to just stream on this, and have their own streaming service, or, you know, go on. And when you do that, yeah, it might be easier. It might give you more of an opportunity. It might give you flexibility that you would not have on TV, but that's because no one out there is investing that kind of coin to do that, with the exception of AEW and, to a small extent, Impact Wrestling. So, you know, there's an old phrase, if you play, you must pay. And a lot of these smaller outlets out there, they think they have the greatest product or the greatest alternative in pro wrestling. And that's cool. You should always have that confidence. But it doesn't equate to numbers. And I don't give a shit. You look at the New Japan numbers, even after Forbidden Door last year, before Forbidden Door, while Forbidden Door was going on, after Forbidden Door was done, New Japan got no bump whatsoever. Zero. Impact Wrestling, when Kenny Omega first invaded there, they got a little bit of a bump. And in fairness, that was the COVID era. It's much different. Especially also, a lot of us were more at home, forced to be at home, so you were more inclined to watch some extra television. But even when the bloom came off of that rose, you know, and you saw how one-sided that Forbidden Door was, that AEW shows up in Impact's door, but Impact is not showing up on AEW's door. You remember when Camille showed up one time on AEW? Remember that? I mean, and that's, and obviously that led to the NWA women's event, you know, when Tony Khan paid for a bunch of people. You know, that you look back in hindsight, and this is why you don't see the bigger footprint out there. Oh, Austin loves the shirt. Yes. Demolition is one of my favorite tag teams of all time. Absolutely, man. Absolutely. You know, one other thing I want to say about tonight's AEW, which I thought overall was a very good show. It was a fun show. Is it going to be one that I'm going to remember a long time? No. It had fun moments, obviously, but I have to say something now. This goes out to my older friends out there. Those who are maybe in their 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I know there's some who are involved in wrestling, and a couple of Hall of Famers that tune in from time to time. And I guarantee you, what I'm about to say is going to strike such a nostalgic nerve. And for all you younger folk out there, and fuck you for being young, much younger than me. I'm envious of all of you. Believe me, I'm envious. But to give you a little insight of what it was like to be a wrestling fan 25, 30 years ago. Now, I'm not talking about Monday Night Wars. I'm not talking about Raw versus Nitro. I'm talking about the indie wrestling scene up until 20 years ago. You know, if anybody goes back to my earlier days, from the hotlines to podcasting, and we would go to indie wrestling shows, some that I was involved in, some that I was there as a fan, we used to always talk about Gaga matches. And tonight, we had a match on AEW that, if I could take all of you and put you all with me in the DeLorean, if we could all squeeze into the DeLorean and type in April 12th, 1995, you would have gotten almost exactly a match tonight. A match tonight. And the match that I'm talking about is this match. Keith Lee versus Chris Jericho. Listen, when you had Mogul Associates, Brian Cage, Prince Nana, shout out to Prince Nana, and Swerve cutting that kind of strange promo where Swerve had an epiphany that, oh, you know, we have some unfinished business. Now, you knew right then and there they're getting involved, or at least Swerve is, in Keith Lee's match. And yes, we will have Swerve Strickland and Chris Jericho versus Adam Cole and Keith Lee coming up in the very near future for AEW. No, do not come back to me and say, DT, you are 100% right. You reported it correctly. No, it's sausage, but that's coming. But that match tonight, if I could take you all in a time machine and you go to your local indie show, think of the movie The Wrestler, okay? Think of the movie The Wrestler, Mickey Rourke. That is probably the closest tonight you will ever get to feel what it was like to go to a local indie wrestling show in the 90s, in the 80s, to a certain extent. Keith Lee tonight, I know there's a lot of talk about the way he looks. Why does he have the gray hair? He looks, you know, like he's having a midlife crisis. If you watch that match closely from beginning to end, with the exception of the swerve. And by the way, you could probably credit, give the assist tonight in Chris Jericho's victory to Jim Cornette. And the only reason why I'm saying that is because when I say it, you know, obviously our audience is smaller. When other podcasters say it, when you say it, our audience overall is smaller. When Jim Cornette says it, and there's hundreds of thousands of people who not only tune in, but will retweet and repost it, that's where it gets noticed. And yes, we have all been complaining that what the fuck ever happened with Swerve Strickland breaking the cinder blocks on Keith Lee's chest, and Keith Lee returns and greetings and salutations. And, oh, I don't remember. And now I sound Jewish. You're like, there was never anything coming from that. And this past week, you know, they were discussing it and like, what the fuck ever happened with that? I guarantee you that somebody in AEW, because people started trending it on social media, fuck, we got to do something about that. That's why sometimes when we start talking about somebody who hasn't been used on TV for a while, suddenly, boom, the following week, they're back on TV. So you definitely could give Cornette a little bit of an assist, but that match tonight with Jericho and Keith Lee, that is what you would have saw back in the 90s, even the late 80s. If you went to your local gym, your local Knights of Columbus, and you could have local students, shit, even like when I was doing work for VPW 15 years ago, you know, you would have regular matches, you'd have some locals, and then you would have like a legend, somebody not way past their prime, but somebody who is not on TV anymore. Chris Jericho, obviously, is like a fine wine. He, you know, as he ages, you know, he's still top tier. Chris Jericho is much better and has much more worth than a 1,000-seat arena in the Indies. But believe me when I tell you, if AEW never existed, Keith Lee and Chris Jericho were not working for a company right now, and this was 1995 or 1990, and you had your local gym, on the marquee, it would have said, main event, Keith Lee versus Chris Jericho. And that match you got tonight is exactly what you would have saw at your local gymnasium, at your local Knights of Columbus, at the Ridgewood Grove Arena, at, you know, Sunnyside Gardens. That match tonight was 100% what you would have saw in the Indies. And that none of that is criticism. That was very, very nostalgic for yours truly. Yes, the ending was kind of predictable with the promo with Swerve Strickland and all that. And yes, Adam Cole coming out at the end, you could see this is leading to a tag match. You know, so some of this is predictable, but it was fun. It was still fun. And yes, wrestling doesn't have to be 5 stars every time. Wrestling does not have to have the crackerjack surprise every time. Wrestling doesn't have to have the epic, amazing, unbelievable, greatest ever, capital letters, OMG, loads of emojis, using the word fucking, you know, in capital letters with an asterisk over the C on social media that everybody has to use, because just saying it doesn't come across enough. No, I have to yell it. I have to grab a megaphone. I have to fucking tell the whole goddamn world because I need to be heard, goddammit. So it was a fun night tonight. I kind of enjoyed it overall. The opening match tonight, Darby Allin over Swerve Strickland, Jungle Boy, and Sammy Guevara watching from the back. We had Prince Nana, you know, because right now the Mogul Associates and the Embassy have kind of like come together. And look, I think the reason why that's happening is I think some members are obviously are going to be taken away. I take a wait and see approach with that. Me personally, as long as someone is getting TV time, that's better, you know, than nothing at all. So, you know, we have Brian Cage and Prince Nana come out to ringside. Brian Cage gets involved in a match a little bit. Aubrey Edwards ejects them, which was kind of funny because they weren't shouldn't have been at ringside in the first place. But Darby Allin with the Last Supper for the win on Swerve Strickland. Let me tell you something. You know, I know we're used to fruit roll-ups, but I wish wrestlers would more use that Last Supper move as a pin. That Darby Allin, when he does it, I just like the way it looks. The camera, the way they positioned. You know, sometimes you see a pin and you see the person like just laying on the mat and you're like, just go like this. Just go like this. Pretend you're going to smell your armpit and you break the pin attempt. That pin that he does, it really just suspension of disbelief. It looks very, very good. MJF comes out, but we come to commercial. And during the commercial, MJF is just trashing Milwaukee, trashing the shit out of Milwaukee. That's why you had no pitcher in pitcher, by the way. But he comes back from commercial and he's mocking, what did he say, Deaky Darby, making fun of Sting, reminds Darby Allin that he beat him with a headlock takeover a couple of years back. And I love this phrase. This should be on a shirt. You are not on the level of the devil. Maybe you could tweak it a little bit, but he just said it in passing tonight, MJF in his promo, but I loved it. You're not on the level of the devil. There's got to be a way to make a shirt out of that. Oop, sorry. I hit the wrong thing over here. Just trying to get back into the swing of things. Okay, good. All right, I had to adjust something here. Very interesting, though. Darby Allin cutting a promo on MJF, and the whole exchange was fun. MJF and the mic was fun. Darby was fun. Sting was fun. Darby, you know, bringing up, you know, going into rehab or therapy, having issues his first year, talking about that he was able to buy his parents a house since he's been in AEW, and all that is true. It is 100% true. But when Darby first started cutting his promo, if you go back 2 weeks and you look at Jungle Boy's promo and you put Darby's, it was almost like word for word the same thing. I mean, complaining. And you know, I'm glad that he shifted over to about his personal issues. But he said, you know, I'm not going to lower my morals to be somebody in this world. And MJF, you know, is sick and tired of everybody saying, you know, that he sold himself, you know, to get where he's at. He calls Darby an arrogant little boy. And he says, morals kill careers. He doesn't care if he goes to heaven when he dies, as long as he's got that championship with him. And at the end of the day, MJF says his legacy is going to be the greatest of all time. And Darby's legacy will be Sting's bitch. Enter Sting. And as we talked earlier, Sting comes out there. And Sting, you know, a little bit of reminiscing. You know, throws pom-poms at MJF because he's been called the cheerleader. As we said earlier, talking about, you know, with the stuff with Cody daycare for MJF, as Sting is to Darby, as Ric Flair was to Sting, and later in Hall and Nash were to Sting. A couple of shout-outs as well. Sting even thinks he still has a little bit of Joker within him. But as we said earlier, you know, Showtime is almost over for Sting. But it's not over for Darby. In fact, Darby, it's just begun. And really, really set it up nicely. This match between the four pillars is going to be a hell of a lot of fun. As of right now, I don't think there's any question MJF is keeping that championship. We had a little discussion yesterday if MJF should keep that championship going into All In at Wembley Stadium. And I actually think yes. I think yes. In fact, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, with the exception of maybe the Trios titles or the Atlantic Championship, the International Championship, excuse me, I don't see many titles changing hands, the main titles between now and All In. I don't see Jade Cargill dropping a championship. FTR, it's possible. It's possible if, you know, CM Punk returns, which a lot of people, we talked about that last week. A lot of people talked about that. You know, you book all in 90,000 people, you know, potentially. And, yeah, we'll talk about a comment that Dave Meltzer made the other day, which, you know, I really appreciate Dave Meltzer. I also say many times he is way off on a lot of things. And, you know, I'll just bring it up now. Bring it up now. You know, if you looked at the thumbnail for tonight's show that I posted, this is an actual quote that Dave Meltzer put online. He actually said with regards to AEW at Wembley, 30% full would be a success. Okay. That picture you're looking at right now is Wembley Stadium. That picture you're looking at right now actually is 50% full. Yes, it doesn't look as much because a lot of people who would have been in the red seats are on the floor. But does that look like success to you? All right, I'll add a little bit further to this. And by the way, for reference, there is the tweet. 30% full would be a success. I wanted to make sure I did not alter it in any way, shape, or form. All right. That screenshot of that attendance is Rihanna's concert from a couple of years ago. Rihanna. I'm not a fan of Rihanna. Is she the one that sang Umbrella, Ella, Ella, A, under my umbrella, Ella? She the one that sung that? Every time I went to wash my car at the car wash, that song would play. I think it was. But anyway, go seek out the story about Rihanna appearing at Wembley. It will mirror what's going to happen with AEW. I promise you. This is not sausage. This is not guessing. It's going to happen. Basically, if you go check out that story, I'll give you a little heads up of what it is. There was a lot of controversy because Rihanna, the building was only half full. So it looked empty. It looked empty. Yes, there was a decent number of people on the floor, but it looked empty. It was 50% full. Now, think of the mindset of Dave Meltzer when he says 30% would be a success. Here is Rihanna in concert at 50%, and that looks like a fucking mess. Now, let me make this clear. Because some people don't get it sometimes when I talk. What I'm saying here is 100% rooting for AEW. Okay? To me, you do not shoot for 30%. You do not shoot for 50%. Even if you have to give out 10,000 tickets. Guess what? If you have to give away 10,000 tickets at the last minute to just try to fill it up a little bit more, I got news for you. The money that some of those people paid next to nothing for those tickets, they might buy a shirt. They might buy some of your merch. I know what some people say, oh, the, a lot of comps like this. It's about the visual. It's about the visual. And one of the things that was talked about were Rihanna's concert. And this is why you got to understand why this is very, very important, because I personally think Dave Meltzer and a bunch of people out there that are already instilling in people's brains that 30% full is a success, you're setting yourself up. You're anticipating disappointment. You're anticipating, why would you even fucking throw that out there? Why would you even get, I used to laugh, and now I understand more the business side of it. I used to laugh my ass off when Impact Wrestling would book 5,000 seat minor league baseball stadiums, and the attendance would be piss poor. And it got to the point where we actually were numbering each person. That's how bored I was at times. But the thing is, AEW will never be on that level of disappointment. But why would you want a visual that the building is only 30% full? 30% full would be 27,000 tickets, even if you say 30,000. I don't give a shit that it's Wembley. I don't give a shit that it's history. There are many buildings, many, many arenas in the UK in that vicinity that seat 40,000 people. Give me AEW in a 40,000 seat building that has 30,000 in attendance that looks almost 100% full or 80% full, then going to a place. Yeah, you know, I had my wedding and I had 130 people there. When I booked the room that fit 150. I'm not going to book a room that has 400 seat capacity and then it looks goddamn empty. No, but everybody showed up. It still looks fucking empty. The optics look ridiculous. So, in my opinion, I think the cost to rent Wembley is like $400,000 to $440,000. $440,000. Now think about the ticket prices. AEW, even if they sold 20,000 tickets, they would pretty much cover that. Tony Khan is a billionaire. $440,000 is a big number, but when you realize that the ticket costs already cover that, you know, obviously you got to make more money to cover the wrestlers, the travel, the hotel, the flights, the food. You know, there's the vendors. So there's crazy ass expense. Why do you book a 90,000 seat building? Because WrestleMania had 80,000 seats? That's, I think, part of it. I think part of it is, well, WWE wants to go to an 80,000 seat building. Well, we'll go to a 90,000 seat building. And the idea that not even a fucking, this wasn't even a week. This was 2 days after the announcement. 30% full would be a success. 30% full would look like a goddamn embarrassment. If I'm AEW, I'm gunning to get that building full. 100%. If you get 80,000, if you get 70,000, if you get 60,000, so be it. But the idea that 30% is a success, that is ridiculous. That is basically setting up people to accept a disappointing number or trying to convince Tony Khan, like, look, anything over 30%, even if you get 30%, you did something that no one else has ever done other than the big con. Look, I don't want to disrespect some of my fellow podcasters and some journalists out there, but I saw something, even though I was on vacation, I still observe what's going on. And I saw something this week that was so goddamn embarrassing. This is, and it's not ignorance. I saw people that I actually have respect for comparing attendance to Goldberg versus Hulk Hogan at the Georgia Dome. And that if AEW goes over 40,000, that would surpass WCW's biggest attendance. Let me just let you all know, in case you're not aware of this. Goldberg versus Hulk Hogan took place on a Monday Nitro, not on pay-per-view. Goldberg versus Hulk Hogan was announced 3 or 4 days before the match happened. In 3 to 4 days, they filled up that building with 30, 40,000, whatever it was. You're comparing a Nitro with a match announced 3 or 4 days in advance to a building that is announced 3 to 4 months in advance? That just goes to show you, people out there, they're just concerned about the numbers. It's about the numbers. It's just about everything is about numbers. And those are the people, with all due respect, you got to stay clear the fuck away from. You know, a lot of people think I'm ridiculous. Hey, DT, why are you going to give away 5,000 tickets? This and that? You don't give it away early on. But if you're getting like a week before the show, 5 days, 3 days before the show, and you still have 10, 20,000 seats available, you know, why do you think on Ticketmaster, sometimes you hear, oh, AEW tickets are selling for $2. Okay, here's where the Rihanna story comes back into play with AEW. One of the biggest problems that Rihanna had at her concert were scalpers, were the online ticket brokers. We used to call them scalpers. I don't know what they call them these days. Okay. And what happens is you get scalpers. Let me bring something else up. Remember last week, everybody was busting a nut talking about, oh, the wait list or the list to be on the list to for the all-in tickets was 25,000 people signed up. I signed up too because I wanted to get alerts. I ain't going to fucking Wembley. I can't afford it. I can't afford it, but I signed up for alerts. 25,000 people signed up. How many people that signed up are actually going to go? So that's also why when AEW touts a sellout and then people will show like sections almost empty, they don't get it. Then you get a lot of people, these ticket brokers that'll buy 10, 20, 50, 100 tickets trying to make money. They'll buy the tickets for face value and then they'll put it on ticketscalp.com for 10 times the price. And what happened with the Rihanna concert? There was like, I think, 10 or 20,000 tickets that ticket brokers bought. And they were demanding crazy-ass money. They didn't get it. They didn't get it. So when the concert happened, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of tickets that these people got stuck with. It's risk. It's almost like the stock market. If I buy 50 tickets for all in at face value, even though I'm in New York and I have no intention on going, I could buy 50 tickets for face value and then I go on ticketschmuck.com and I say, okay, well, you know, if you want to buy a ticket, $500. And now I sell a couple of them, but I still got 40 tickets left. Now we're a month from the show. All right, I got to drop the price to $400. And then I might sell a couple, but I still got 35 tickets left out of 50. So now I dropped the price to 300. Now everybody is dropping their price because everybody's afraid they're going to get stuck with their tickets. Now you're a couple of days away and you realize that unless it's a local person, people from overseas are not going to be able to buy a ticket and 2 days later fly over without anything in advance. So what happens? The day of the event, you got hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of tickets that weren't sold because you got too greedy. And you're like, you know what? I'd rather be able to buy a fucking cup of coffee than nothing. That's why sometimes when you see these goofs online that are giggling like, AEW, the tickets are selling for $2. How many times did you see that? We see it once in a while with WWE as well, but how many times do you see that? That's not because AEW's product is shit. That's because these ticket brokers were too greedy. They didn't sell their tickets. So now it's the day of the event. Now they're worth nothing. Now, I hate to say it, now you got to hope there's a tragedy. Now you got to hope that there's some serious tragedy. Because then all those tickets that you didn't sell, shit, I'll put that on eBay. Did you ever look at the eBay auctions the night that Owen Hart passed away? Have you ever seen them? Have you ever covered that story? We covered it a long time ago. About 15 years ago, Don Tony, Kevin Castrosol, we covered an eBay auction. Somebody had an unused ticket for the night that Owen Hart passed away at Over the Edge. And the guy got like $4,000 or $5,000 for the ticket. And the ticket was legit. So you get all these brokers. And let me tell you something. At the end of the day, AEW very well could sell 50, 60, 70,000 tickets. Keep in the back of your mind that 10, 20, 30,000 of those tickets could be from ticket brokers. Regular people thinking they can make a couple extra bucks. Let me buy an extra ticket or two. Instead of me buying two, let me buy four. I'll throw it on eBay, see if I can get an extra $100. Even if I get an extra $50 out of it. So keep that in mind. Because this was very recent with that Rihanna concert. And the only reason why I'm name-dropping Rihanna is because that happened at Wembley. And it was a major controversy. So what happened with Rihanna is going to happen with AEW. I will bet you anything it happens to AEW. Just remember something. If you are a fan of business, if you are a fan of enterprise, if you're a fan of AEW, keep this in the back of your mind. Even if brokers get stuck with 10, 20,000 tickets and all in happens and you look at that building, it's only about 60% full. But you find out that the total tickets sold is like 10 or 20,000 more. Remember, AEW got their money. That's the thing that these morons online don't understand. When you see that AEW tickets are selling for $2, understand they already bought the tickets. AEW took the money and put it in their pocket. When I was going to do an indie wrestling event, I was going to do my own event like 15 years ago, and I didn't do it, and I'm glad I didn't. But if I did my own event and it sat 1,000 people and I sold out 1,000 tickets, but only 500 people showed up and other people thought that they were going to be able to make money off it and they didn't, guess what? I still got money for the 1,000 tickets. So keep in mind that situation because this is a big deal. And it's going to be bigger than you think. That's why when you hear this stuff from Meltzer and others, I will never accept 30% of anything. Fuck that. Who the fuck wants to see a 90,000 seat building 30% full? I'd rather see a 30,000 seat building 100% full. Why? Because it's Wembley. Because it's history. Because it's a bigger building than WWE. Oh, fuck that. Oh, fuck that. Seriously. I mean, if anybody out there, including Tony Khan, has to be that, sensitive, that's why you got to do it, it's like a bucket list thing, that's misguided. That's misguided. I don't think anybody would end up, listen, if AEW sells 90,000 tickets, and they do it, or even 80,000, you know what? Good for them. Good for them. Hopefully it's a kick-ass fucking show. It'll be a memory for everybody who goes there. It'll be a memory for the wrestlers. It'll be a memory for wrestling fans. And at the end of the day, that's what matters. The turnaround, you think, you know, Vince McMahon is going to be offended or his ego is going to be... Listen, I think Vince McMahon's ego gets more triggered right now when people like laughed at his eyebrows and he decided that he was going to use a black fucking Sharpie to fucking... I mean, everybody was talking about the mustache. I was talking about the dye job last week. I think Vince's ego is affected more if you talk about his penis than if you talk about Wembley, in my opinion. So, all right. Powerhouse Hobbs over Silas Young in a squash. And I hope Aaron Solo is okay. I know some people are tuning in right now and that follows me for a long time. Like, wait a minute, DT, did I just hear what you said? You hope Aaron Solo is okay. I'm not the biggest Aaron Solo fan, but I don't know if you caught it tonight. I'm a huge fan of Hobbs, and I'm a big fan of Wardlow, but that was just an absolute clusterfuck. Now, I was envious of Hobbs's car because I used to have a Cutlass. I had an 81 Cutlass back in the day. So that was a Cutlass Supreme, vintage Cutlass, probably 82 or 83. And, you know, it was tricked out, but you could see that, you know, it was not, didn't have the value that it was perceived to be. But Hobbs squashes Silas Young, and QT Marshall gave him the car as a gift last week, so you know what's going to end up happening to it. So Wardlow is seen in the parking lot, chases away a security guard, grabs a pipe, and the first thing I laughed at is, if anybody out there has ever used that rap stuff, and no, I'm not talking about I'm not talking about rap like rap music, but I'm talking about when you rap like logos on cars, the vinyl lettering. Taking a pipe, we'll have to pretend this is a pipe for a minute. My salami, don't mess with my salami. He goes like this across the door, and you know they have I Am the Table. That was I Am the Vinyl. Because he thought that he was actually going to, like, rip apart the Hobbs logo or whatever was Powerhouse. It didn't do a damn thing. But he's breaking the headlights, he's breaking the taillights, he's breaking the windshield. And Hobbs is standing on the rampway. And I am, listen, go back, do a search on my channel. Do a Google search. Just type in Don Tony and Hobbs, and you'll see how much I root for this motherfucker. I am a big fan of Hobbs, and I will be the first to admit it. He looked like a bad cartoon that Wardlow is doing everything he's doing in a parking lot. And Hobbs is on the rampway going like this. He looked like one of those fucking jumping jacks. He's like this. And I'm like, go in the parking lot. Go fucking wrestle. It's just storyline. It looks stupid. He's standing there. Which way did he go, George? Which way did he go? It looked like a bad cartoon, and Wardlow's taking his time. He's breaking his stuff, and Hobbs is like this. And then finally Wardlow gets like a little mini forklift that you use to pick up like beer kegs and stuff. And he turns the car upside down, which was cool. Went through the windshield, lifted it up, pulled back a little bit, tilted it. It was funny. He didn't know how to put it in park, so he got off of the thing and it rode into the car anyway. So he turns the car upside down. And hopefully I'm turning your frowns upside down. But and after all of that, Hobbs still isn't running the parking lot. He decides, I'm so mad, I'm going to powerbomb Silas Young. And oh, look, there's a table right off the ramp, conveniently right along the... Look, there's two tables side by side. I'm going to powerbomb Silas Young. And then Wardlow's music hits. And Wardlow comes out on the stage and they start brawling. And Hobbs, with all due respect, looked like a fucking goof there. Standing on the rampway, Wardlow is doing whatever he wants. It's almost like if this was a Triple X movie... It's almost like you walk into your house and some other person is banging your significant other and you're just standing in the doorway going like this. You fucking grab the person, you grab them by the dick and you flip them around. You fucking throw them like one of those boomerangs. You don't just stand there like this. So they're brawling and Wardlow grabs Aaron Solo. Now, I guarantee you, probably the botch accounts picked up on it immediately. Wardlow picks up Aaron Solo, goes to powerbomb him off the stage through the table. There were two tables lined up next to each other. Wardlow dumps him through only one table. The back of Aaron Solo's head whacked the other table because he was only thrown through one. And if you go back and you watch it, I hope Aaron Solo's okay. Because that looked really, really... Listen, I've gone through tables, all right? And I've gone through those types of tables. They break pretty easily, especially if you're a little bit heavy or if you get thrown onto it. But the edge of the table is still the edge of the table. The edge of the table is not designed to break as easily as the middle of the table. The edge of the table actually has extra... rubber and, you know, just it's reinforced. Go look at the spot. Now, since I brought it up, if you didn't notice it before, go look at it now and you'd be like, oh, I hope he's okay. I really do. Juice Robinson and Jay White cut a promo on Ricky Starks. They are now calling themselves Bullet Club Gold. And the reason why they're calling him Bullet Club Gold is because, as we will get into Impact's predictions in a little bit for Rebellion this weekend, we got Bullet Club everywhere. We got him in Japan. We got him on Impact. We got him on the indie circuit. We got him in AEW. When everybody is Bullet Club, nobody is Bullet Club. Orange Cassidy over Buddy Matthews to retain the championship, the international title. Then we got the return of Jeff Hardy. Basically, we got this, you know, really creative that, Ethan Page, your contract against Hook had a clause in it that if you lost and Hook won, that Matt Hardy and Private Party, you know, would no longer be this and wouldn't be able to do this. And we're going to have a match and I get to choose stipulation. And if this happened, I'm like, how come no one else in wrestling does that? Whenever you have a match against someone, why don't you put in the contract, I get to have sex with your wife or your husband, or I get to buy your car, or you have to clean my feet. You know, like the regular contract had like 1,000. That's like, all right, we never finished the storyline. Oh, let's just do a match. And somewhere in the contract, there was this little fine print that, we're not going to use you anymore. We're just going to have, late next week we'll reveal that in the contract it said that you're not allowed to wrestle in the United States anymore. You know, in fact, you get the Hulk Hogan treatment. You know, it's like, it was a little bit campy, but, you know, Ethan Page is not alone. Here comes Big Bill, and we get a beatdown, and then here comes Hook, and then Jeff Hardy shows up. Crowd went nuts. really, really enjoyed it. You know, let's hope Jeff Hardy stays, you know, in his lane. You know, we almost feel like Jeff Hardy only has one speed. He's got to become a 10 speed. You know, you remember when we had bikes when we were young? It was one speed. I think it was three speed. And then you had 10 speed. I mean, you play with the 10 speed, you know, too many speeds, you know. Jeff Hardy's got to learn a few more speeds. So, but nice to see him back. I purposely enhanced the lighting on this because some of you last week wanted to see the difference with Luchasaurus's mask. So there you go. Obviously, there was some copyright issue with his mask before, so they have tweaked it. So when Christian is talking about some things have changed, you know, Luchasaurus's outfit is going to be a little bit different. You know, the lighting, I could probably filter out the red, but you get a better idea of, look, I still like it. I still like it. So, you know, the big question is, how long is Christian Cage going to remain in AEW? I still think he might end up in WWE in 2023. Kenny Omega cutting a promo, claiming that he wasn't in the building, and that, yeah, I know a lot of people don't like Don Callis, but he's still family, and you fuck with family, and you got a big problem, blah, 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 blah. Sending a message to the Blackpool Combat Club. With all due respect, I think a majority of fans out there want Brandon Cutler to get his ass kicked. Michael Nakazawa I actually enjoy a little bit, but watching Claudio and Moxley bloody up like Nakazawa and Brandon Cutler, those are not baby faces, especially Brandon Cutler. That is like a mosquito with hair. It's like a mosquito with a beard. Like, good, beat the fuck out of them. And they beat the crap out of them. And after the match is over, Kenny Omega's music hit. He's here after all. And he shows up and the Young Bucks show up. And they start taking out the Blackpool Combat Club. BTE trigger on Moxley. Super kick party. And then Omega looks like he's going to hit Moxley. I don't know if it was a keg. Somebody said a keg, which I thought was pretty funny, you know, because, you know, people like Moxley drinking. I'm like, oh, lighten the fuck up. It's an inanimate object. It's not like he's going to do the CM Punk Jericho storyline. He's going to force him to drink alcohol. But instead, one of the Young Bucks whips out a flathead screwdriver. No, no, no. Dig this into Moxley's head instead after what happened last week with Hangman Page. And I laughed. I laughed because I was like, Moxley's probably having an orgasm right now. You show him a screwdriver, and that's exactly what happened. Moxley, like, yeah, bring it, motherfucker. I love it. Make me bleed. Please, please. It's like drugs to me. Make me bleed. So right before Omega kind of like jabs at Moxley, it would have been a crime if it would have connected. They pull him out of the ring. So now everybody is starting to look at anarchy in the arena. We're probably going to have the Elite, you know, versus the Blackpool Combat Club. Maybe an extra person, we'll see. At, you know, could it happen as early as Double or Nothing? Absolutely. Even though one of the Young Bucks has like a torn bicep or a torn muscle in the arm, that doesn't mean they can't kick, as you saw tonight. The fact that you could do anarchy in the arena means that you don't have to execute a lot of your traditional wrestling moves. So if you're going to do anything, that's probably the perfect opportunity to do that match. So we will see. We will see what happens. Ruby Soho and Tony Storm over Rio and Sky Blue. This match was actually pretty good. Sky Blue, I think, gets a rough break sometimes because she gets featured in a lot of botches. I do get a kick out of Sky Blue when she does hit like one move and she knows she hit it well and she starts screaming like that release of energy. She hit, I think, a Huracan Rana on Tony Storm tonight. And right after she exits, she looks at her and she goes, ah, like, yeah, it's only one move, honey. You know, do that 10 times in a row and don't fuck up. And then you could talk. But she's good. You know, she's still very, very young. But the match was good. But in the end, Storm Zero and Sky Blue for the win. After they spray paint the L on Riho, triple powerbomb, little reminiscing of the Shield. yeah, I know people won't admit it, but Jamie Hayter come out to almost no reaction. Britt Baker came out to a mild reaction. I think people are just sick of every week the same rinse, repeat. You know, Outkast win a match, spray paint, go to do a little more. Here comes Baker and Hayter. The Hayter and the Baker. You know, like, they make the save, run off the... Listen, it's leading to a match next week. Next week, we're going to get Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker versus Toni Storm and Ruby Soho, which is very interesting that they're actually going to do that next week on free TV. I would have thought that maybe something would have developed a little bit further for Double or Nothing, and it still could. But I think people are just sick with this rinse-repeat of the same thing happening every week. Then you had the main event, which we already talked about in great detail. Chris Jericho beating Keith Lee, Swerve Strickland, you know, with the assist of Cornette, as I said, Swerve Strickland getting involved. And after the match is over, Adam Cole shows up. He does the same look like Jericho last week, you know, the respect, and he walks off with Keith Lee. So Keith Lee and Adam Cole versus Jericho and Swerve Strickland. Hell, you might even get Swerve Strickland and then Daniel Garcia. Personally, I think Jericho's got to be involved in that match. But that's how they went off the air. Listen, I talked about ratings yesterday. You know, very interesting that 2 weeks ago, Adam Cole's return to the ring after a seven-month absence was the lowest part of Dynamite for the entire episode. Go look it up if you think I'm wrong. That was kind of mind-boggling. Last week, FTR... careers in AEW versus tag titles, you get one of two outcomes. Either FTR finally won AEW tag titles or FTR no longer in AEW. Either outcome you would think is pretty fucking big. That match was the lowest rated part of last week's Dynamite. That is 2 weeks in a row that FTR and Adam Cole with some pretty special situations going on. Adam Cole's return to the ring and FTR, titles versus careers, lowest part of Dynamite for the whole night. I don't know what happens tonight with Chris Jericho and Keith Lee. Be really interesting. If they pop a nice rating for that main event, what does that say about the current situation of FTR? I mean, they might be like hugely over amongst the live fans. Why are fans tuning it out? Why are fans, 150,000 plus, 200,000, tuning it out? This is not a three-hour Raw. Like, you're talking some special circumstances there. And they still tuned it off. Found that really interesting. So, all right, let's get into a couple other things. And we'll start jetting out of here. By the way, did you... notice Excalibur slipping up at the end. Rampage this Friday is going to be at 9:30 instead of 10. I don't know why only the half hour difference. Yeah, I could see it now. People are going to talk about the SmackDown, you know, effect and Rampage with the half hour, you know, overlap. I don't know what the situation is, why they couldn't do it at 10, but at the very end, Excalibur says, oh, next week on Dynamite at a special start time, 8 p.m. Eastern. Yeah, he mixed up Rampage. Not a big deal. But if anybody got a little confused when Excalibur said that, yeah, he said a special start time, 8 p.m. Eastern. I thought that was pretty funny. NXT yesterday, you know, really interesting. You know, I originally wrote something on the preview and I had to change it. Just like last week, we were going to talk about Tony Khan having a little bit of a personality disorder, and I put that aside because of the, you know, the Wembley announcement, and overall he's been pretty okay online, so we wait until he says something really dumb or unnecessary, then we'll bring that to surface. But, you know, next week on NXT, you know, they got some pretty interesting matches going down, and in 2 weeks we're going to get Grayson Waller versus Carmelo Hayes. I'm a little bit confused, but Bron Breakker turning heel the last week and this week, I fucking love it. Now, some people are late to get the memo. We've talked about it 2 weeks ago that some of the names that are going to the main roster, WWE is leaving in NXT, or in some cases may end up doing double duty for a little while. Bron Breakker, the reason why they are keeping him a little bit longer in NXT is not only to help Carmelo Hayes and for name value, but now they are testing him being a heel. You don't want Bron Breakker just showing up on SmackDown without testing live audiences and being almost like, you know, Rick Steiner, bite me, or vintage Scott Steiner when he was a heel. You know, this is uncharted territory. Bron Breakker, pretty much his entire pro wrestling career, other than spying in his father's house, his entire pro wrestling career, we've watched before our very eyes. So to see him now turning heel and cutting promos, he's got no other arena to test it in. So they are testing it with the local crowd. And I love it. You know, the problem is when you look at the roster, you don't have many victims to choose from to get assaulted from Bron Breakker. Bron Breakker fucking with Chase University yesterday was so, like, out there, like, you would, like, out of everybody, it's like, all right, Chase University is super over, obviously, but it's like, it just goes to show you that is very slim pickings for Bron Breakker to destroy anybody right now in that company. Nobody's going to give a shit if he beats up fucking Wu Yang, whatever his name is. Not going to give a shit if he beats up, Odyssey Jones, which I expect to happen. I expect Bron Breakker to pick that motherfucker up just for the visual of him picking up Odyssey Jones. So you look at clear-cut, huge baby faces in that company, there's not as many as you think. And he certainly isn't going to beat up any women. But Bron Breakker, the last 7 days, bravo. Fucking love that he is this comfortable, this quick. And it starts to make you think, when he goes to that main roster, and they're probably going to keep him heel, who is he going to go after? That's what you guys start thinking about, because we were thinking a whole different... I personally think he might end up getting into it with Bobby Lashley. Don't ask me why. We'll talk about it another night. I think one of the persons he might end up getting involved with is Bobby Lashley. So, Bron Breakker, Gable Stevenson is nowhere near ready to do this on a regular basis. Nowhere near it. No, that's why he's even going back to amateur to do. He's nowhere close. Being on TV is possible, but Bron is in a whole different realm. Here's another thing. You know, we determined a new number one contender for Carmelo Hayes' championship yesterday, and that was Grayson Waller. Last week, you know, you had Cora Jade attacking Indy Hartwell, and I thought it was so stupid. And we joked about it yesterday on our show, myself and Kevin, that, you know, they announced, like, Cora Jade's going to explain why she attacked Indy Hartwell. And I'm like, come on. I mean, maybe she wants the women's championship? Like, I think it's interesting because you got Ilya, you got JD McDonough, you got some incredible wrestlers there. Sol Ruka and Tiffany Stratton yesterday. You know, I think a lot of people missed the boat and missed the meaning behind their match. They were doing a lot of acrobatic stuff. This was not them. I saw people just itching to say, don't we see the same shit in AEW and you complain? No, they were trying to showboat each other. They were showing off their gymnastics skills and their skills at, you know, flipping to embarrass each other. There's a big difference. Synchronized moves is totally different of what we saw yesterday with those two women. But the fact that Tiffany Stratton in 1 year, Sol Ruka only has, go check Sol Ruka's wrestling career, how many matches she has. It'll blow your mind how few matches she has. So you look at the overall roster, you think of Dragon Lee, Wes Lee, Bruce Lee. You think of Carmelo Hayes and Bron Breakker still there. And Roxanne Perez, by the way, the Battleground premium live event poster is out. And here you go. Here's something interesting. May 28th, Lowell, Massachusetts. Yes. Look at the cover. Roxanne Perez is still shown. Bron Breakker is still shown. But anybody notice something about the date and the time? That night, May 28th, 7:30 p.m., NXT Battleground, that is the same night as AEW Double or Nothing. So you're going to probably have to make a choice that day. Which one are you going to watch live? NXT Battleground or AEW Double or Nothing? I got to be honest with you right now. I got to go with AEW Double or Nothing. I don't even think it's close. But, you know, you look at the matches. Last night, Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn over Fallon Henley and Kiana James. Brooks and Jensen teasing further to split, putting, you know, women over their own personal relationship. Eddie Thorpe over Javier Bernal, Tiffany Stratton over Saul Ruka, Ilya Dragunov over Von Wagner, and Von Wagner and Mr. Stone are no longer together, which we knew was coming. So, you know, we got to see when Von Wagner is on Raw or SmackDown. That's happening soon, everybody. Joe Coffey over Tank Ledger, Grayson Waller over Dragon Lee, Jaden McDonough and Duke Hudson to become the new number one contender for Carmelo Hayes' championship. The rating yesterday, believe it or not, was only 528,000 viewers, down from last week's 555, which was down from the week prior, 624. You see the numbers continuing to go down. Why is that? I will keep saying it. I know this sounds a little bit ridiculous, but for anybody who follows NXT, I think you understand it. I think there's three big problems with NXT right now. Too many number one contenders matches. Too many, I mean, and don't get me wrong, the four ways have been tremendous. We had, you know, the determined spots for the ladder match. We had determined spots for, you know, Wesley's title. We have matches to determine who faces Carmelo Hayes. Problem is you don't have any hardcore deep feuds. Like the biggest feud, and even Bron Breakker, they're shifting a little bit away from Carmelo Hayes. Bron Breakker is not facing Carmelo Hayes at the Battleground. So you look at NXT as a whole, like the deepest feud right now is probably the feud that nobody wanted. JC Jane versus Gigi Dolin. They did a skit yesterday, Gigi Dolin, an amazing house rental. And JC, they're still pushing that. They split them up, which I think turned off a lot of fans. Obviously, Mandy Rose being gone has hurt them tremendously. And I think also too many number one contenders matches, too many tournaments, too many of the, because there's not enough deep hardcore feuds. Carmelo Hayes, we talked about it the night of Stand and Deliver, WrestleMania weekend. Okay, NXT, now what? Who does Carmelo Hayes feud with? Who is going to be his? Please don't have Trick Williams turn on him. Like, that seems like the only logical, the only way you pick up, oh, let's do a tournament. Let's do a contenders match. And I think that's what they've really fallen into a problem with. Depending too many on Acme Instafeuds is what I used to call it in the 90s when I did my hotline. Too many of this. And I think the ratings are starting to really, really be affected by it. I mean, just think about 528. Especially coming off of this, the era of Mello and Braun spectacular as a heel the last 7 days. And you got Ilya and Jaden McDonough and Dragon Lee and Wes Lee and you and Tiffany Stratton and others. And they can't even break 600,000 viewers now. You know, that is very, very glaring. Very glaring. So, all right. Let's quickly just give you the rundown for Impact Wrestling. They have Rebellion going on this weekend. And I think, you know, this is going to be remembered for two matches more than anything. In case you're not aware of it, there is no Impact Wrestling heavyweight champion right now. Josh Alexander had to relinquish the championship because of injury. We are going to crown a new champion. And it's very interesting, the participants in this match. I don't know how people feel about it, but let me give you the quick rundown. And I'll give you some quick predictions, just for the hell of it. You got the Bullet Club defending the Impact Tag Team Championships against the Motor City Machine Guns. Personally, I think Bullet Club will retain the Motor City Machine Guns. I think, didn't they just announce that Chris Sabin is celebrating 20 years in Impact? My God, Chris Sabin, 20 years in Impact Wrestling. That was kind of surprising. But I don't see the Motor City Machine Guns winning this match, even though he's celebrating 20 years in that company. The Design taking on Joe Hendry, Dirty Dango, and Santino Marella. Yes, that Santino Marella. Personally, I'm going with the Design. I mean, you got, not only you have Santino, but you have Fandango, Dirty Dango in this match. I think this is going to be more comedy than what anybody was expecting. So I'm going with the Design to take this match. There'll be some comedic moments, though. Trey Miguel defending the X Division Championship against Jonathan Gresham and Mike Bailey in an elimination match. Everybody loves Trey Miguel as champion. I think Mike Bailey is destined to be the next X Division champion, but I'm going with Trey Miguel to retain that title for now. WWE released the Santino Marella trademark. They just didn't feel it was needed anymore. Santino Marella grabbed it. People do release trademarks. Hey, give me a little credit, everyone. The infamous story of the ECW trademark. I know old-time friends of mine that are tuning in are like, oh, God, here it comes. If you want a good, funny story, go on Google, go on the U.S. trademarks website, and just type in ECW, and you will find yours truly for about 7 months owned the trademark for ECW. No joke, legit story, go look it up, and then you could check out one of the older episodes as to how that happened and why it happened. Yes, I got cease and desist from Todd Gordon, that prick. He was the ultimate asshole towards me. WWE tried to sue me also, gave me cease and desist because I was advertising Hardcore Homecoming as an ECW reunion show. They're like, you cannot do that. So I went and I trademarked ECW, and they were like, okay, now you could do it. And then Todd Gordon feasts his fucking lawyers on me. I'm like, oh, fuck you. You bald-headed prick. Seriously. The Coven will be defending the Knockouts tag team titles against the Death Dolls. I'm a huge fan of Rosemary, but I don't see the Death Dolls getting the championship. I'm going with the Coven to retain their titles. Don't worry, we will have a title change. Check this out. Team Bully versus Team Dreamer. This is, oh, and somebody's asking, who is the Coven? That's Kylan King and Taylor Wilde, by the way. And I didn't say it earlier, somebody asked, I see in the chat, Bullet Club, those are the members, Chris Bay and Ace Austin. I should have been a little bit clearer when I said that. Are they Bullet Club black and white? Yeah, we'll just leave it at that. Because we got Bullet Club gold now in AEW. All right, so we got Team Bully, which is Bully Ray, Kenny King, Masha Slamovic, and Jason Hotch and John Skyler. They will be taking on Team Dreamer in Tommy Dreamer, Frankie Kazarian, Yuya Uemura, Killer Kelly, and Blupinda Gujar. And if you notice, there are women and men in this match. It is technically an intergender hardcore war. It is going to be a hardcore war. I get this weird vibe that Team Dreamer is going to win. We have to have the feel-good moment. Bully Ray is got a lot of heat on him right now. I'm going with Team Dreamer to win that match. Now it gets a little interesting. It gets a, well, yeah. PCO, I can't believe that this guy has not appeared in AEW even once. PCO is like a guilty pleasure. He's like the White Castle of pro wrestling. Like once in a blue moon, you have to just binge on a little bit of PCO. But if you have a little bit too much of it, you get a little tummy ache. PCO against Eddie Edwards in a last rights match. This is going to be wild. I personally am rooting for PCO. If Team Dreamer wins, I'm going with PCO in this one. But, you know, there are quite a few people that think Eddie Edwards is actually going to win this one. So, and that is Alicia Edwards in his corner. So I'm rooting for PCO to win that one. All right. That leaves us, I think, with two matches. Mickie James, still Knockouts champion, still wrestling, because you remember the angle with her retirement. She is going to announce Thursday if she can compete, because there is an injury angle and there is a legit injury aspect to this. From what I was told, she is going to wrestle. Don't make that official until we actually see it. Just like we shouldn't have made official something else last week, which we will talk about in a moment. We got some good news about the grizzled young veterans. You can't call them the grizzled free agents yet, but I have something to say about that. And I am going to criticize Meltzer and a few others. Wait for it. Mickie James defending the Knockouts championship against Deonna Purrazzo and Jordynne Grace in a three-way. And that's if Mickie James is cleared. If she's not cleared, she will have to relinquish the title. We will get a new champion. I get a weird feeling Mickie James is losing his title. I get a weird feeling that Jordynne Grace will actually either defeat Deonna Purrazzo or the reverse. I don't think Mickie James will be involved in the actual pin. I like Mickie James as Knockouts champion, but it feels like it's time for a change. Jordynne Grace has been killing it in the bodybuilding world. I just don't know how much she still wants to focus on. Yes, thank you, Cruiserweight, for the $2 super chat. Bullet Club Gold is Juice Robinson and Jay White. Yeah, we were joking about it earlier that AEW's Bullet Club Gold is Juice Robinson and Jay White, which should make Bullet Club Ace Austin and Chris Bay Bullet Club Black and White. And I know someone out there is probably angry with me. I think we're going to get a title change. I'm probably wrong, but at the end of the day, Deonna Purrazzo seems to have been in a rut without the championship. I'm going to go with Deonna Purrazzo. I think Jordynne Grace would be great as the champion again, but I got to go with Deonna Purrazzo. Deonna Purrazzo had so much fucking momentum, and it just feels like ever since she dropped that title, she's been kind of, I know she's not in as much of a rut as perceived, but I think Deonna needs the championship again. I think Deonna may pin Jordynne Grace, but I have a feeling Mickie James will lose that championship without being pinned. All right, and that leaves us, check this out, to crown a new Impact Wrestling World Champion. It's going to be Steve Maclin against Kushida. I got to be honest with you, I am a huge fan of Kushida. I have never kept that hidden, especially as an NXT. I look at this match and I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling it. Even though I would love to see Kushida win a world championship, I'm envisioning the promos. I'm envisioning the feuds. And if something is going to be really, really lacking in that department, it almost feels like you got to give it to Steve Maclin by default. And I have nothing against Steve Maclin, but Impact World Champion, new World Champion Steve Maclin, that's like me going to a diner and like, hey, what's the special? Oh, we got this tremendous, awesome calf's liver. It's like, yeah, just it doesn't flow. I'm not feeling that Steve Maclin is world champion, but I have a feeling they're going to go with Steve Maclin to win it. So we should revert back to the... Oh, there's Bullet Club Black and White, or White and Black. So I don't care what I offend. Fuck you. I have no anger in me, assholes. I want to finish tonight with two things. First of all, I wanted to throw it out there, because I know some of you out there don't like Bret Hart anymore. I know some of you absolutely love Bret Hart. Bret Hart made some comments about the current state of pro wrestling. Interesting that it's not about Roman Reigns. It's not about Cody Rhodes. It's not about Sami Zayn or Kevin Owens. You would think Canada? No. He thinks that the current state of wrestling is on a decline. And he would say, and I quote, AEW is, and listen, let me be clear. This could be taken out of context. And what I mean by that is maybe Bret Hart was asked in this interview about Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. The problem is that nobody is reporting or posting what he said about said new WWE Undisputed World Tag Team Champions. The only comments that are coming out of this interview is what he said about he feels that pro wrestling is on decline. And when asked to elaborate a little bit further, he brought up AEW and he brought up Jon Moxley. And he said, and I quote, AEW has kind of gone in a bad direction, I think, with all the violence and the gore. I watched some episodes. You know, I watched Martha Hart do a big press conference for AEW here in Calgary. I'm watching AEW, and I'm watching who used to be Dean Ambrose sticking a fork in someone's head for like 5 minutes with a close-up on TV. This isn't wrestling either. I would recommend turning all of that off. I don't watch that stuff anymore. It's not very good. Wrestling is going in some bad directions because people don't know what wrestling is or what wrestling was. I am a huge fan of Bret Hart. Bret Hart always represents in this room. I think Bret Hart needs to watch The Alternative. You know, like if AEW is on the decline, if you don't like the blood and the death matches, there's a lot of other wrestling out there to watch. Maybe the overall scope of pro wrestling is on the decline for different reasons, but nobody is saying that you must watch the blood and the gore. There is so much out there, and I am a huge fan of Bret, but I kind of feel that his response is a little bit shallow. And probably even more now where I think Goldberg should have his retirement match in AEW. That would be pretty funny. But, hey, I want to finish on an update from last week. And, you know, look, if I'm going to report news, I will tell you, I got this firsthand. 90% of the time here, I opine. And what does that mean? I give my opinions on what is happening in the world of pro wrestling and beyond, news that's reported, rumors. I give you my thoughts and my opinions. All right. I leave the journalism for the journalists. Once in a while, I get a scoop. I share it with all of you, and that's cool. Us last week saying that Jeff Hardy was returning was just us being fans. We're not being reporters. But last week, we had a pretty deep conversation about the Grizzled Young Veterans, the Dyad. Part of the schism. And last week, I talked about how Dave Meltzer and Jason Powell and others were reporting that the Grizzled Young Veterans requested their release from WWE, and they were granted their release. Dave Meltzer posted it on social media. Jason Powell posted it on his website. A couple other people posted it on social media and their websites. And we commented about it last week, and I gave a lot of props to the Grizzled Young Veterans because forever I was not a fan. And they just started clicking with me. And they are one of the better tag teams that have not been discovered by the everyday wrestling fan. And if you remember my conversation last week, I said, let's hold out hope that maybe they could work something out with WWE last minute. Maybe Triple H promises them a little bit more, but these outlets reported that they requested and they were granted their release. Well, the Grizzled Young Veterans, the Dyad, were on NXT last night. They have not left WWE. They have not left NXT. Check this out if you think I'm making it up. I immediately go to Twitter. And I go search for Dave Meltzer's post and a few other journalists, and they're all deleted. I go on two wrestling news sites to see, you know, like, what happened? You know, all right, they got it wrong. Hey, people get shit wrong. What pisses me off is when they just delete it. Instead of posting a fucking follow-up saying that, they requested their release and they have decided to stay for the foreseeable future and they're going to get more of an opportunity. Post a fucking update. In this case, I'm happy that they were wrong. I'm glad that they're still going to be on television. I'd rather see them on television than not see them at all. What I don't like are these journalists. I opine, I'm not a journalist, but I see these journalists, they did it with Mercedes Moné in AEW. They did it with the Saudi Arabia buy in WWE. They do it over and over and over again. They did it with Sami Zayn in the Royal Rumble. They report this whacked out news. They get it wrong, and they just delete it. Oh, I just deleted it. I mean, to me, that is Bush League. That is amateur. And that is just people who are too shallow to have the respect for all of us. Or, the, you know what, even more, the respect to the Grizzled Young Veterans. Grizzled Young Veterans are not required to go on social media and call out these journalists and say, you're wrong, we're still part of NXT. That's not their place to do it. But out of respect for the wrestlers, wouldn't it be much cooler to see Meltzer and Jason Powell and a bunch of other journalists go online and say, update, I'm happy to report that the Dyad are not leaving WWE as of yet, that they requested their release, but they have had discussions with WWE, and they are going to remain for the foreseeable future. Positive news story, we're happy, and we move on. No, instead, delete. Delete. And that's Bush League. Honestly, that is amateur hour. And if you think that I'm making it up, go look online. Because a lot of your favorite podcasters, not named yours truly, responded to a lot of these tweets and reports. And you'll see those people's responses, and then you'll look for the original report that says, this tweet has been deleted. Fucking Bush League. Bush League. So I wanted to let you all know, happy to let you know, that they are still with WWE as of now. What that happens in the future, we have no idea. But as of now, they're still around. Hey, who knows? They might end up becoming tag team champions in the very near future. Gallus are okay. I just, to me, it's something about Gallus that I think we need a little bit of a change, and we'll see what happens. But anyway, I'm going to get out of here. I want to thank you all for joining me tonight. And, yeah, post your comments. I appreciate everybody who joined me, whether it's live or on a replay. And it's fun to be back. I mean, I was gone for 6 days, and yesterday it felt a little bit odd, you know, coming back and doing a show. And, you know, but we are back. And my next stream will be Saturday morning at 11:05 a.m. for the Don Tony Show. I'm already working on a couple of really, really good topics for us to get into. We got SmackDown on Friday, and we'll see what happens there. Just, you know, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but they are building to Matt Riddle, Sami Zayn, and Kevin Owens versus the Usos and Solo Sikoa, and that may end up happening in a Backlash, or as Cody Rhodes said, WrestleMania Backlash. But, you know, that is something that we may end up seeing develop for Friday. And, yeah, we'll talk about it on Saturday. So if you enjoyed the show, you know what to do. If you know anyone else out there that would like the channel. But remember, most importantly, DonTony.com. Because, you know, as I've said before, and I don't want to get into it here. I talked about it yesterday for a few minutes. You know, from going forward, there's going to be a pretty even balance. There's going to be some shows that have the video aspect of it here because I like to show you pictures and screenshots and video clips when necessary. But there's also going to be shows that are audio only. And, you know, and there's going to be shows that are not going to be live. You know, I mean, it's pretty obvious. And listen, Mondays is different, Raw. Wednesdays is different, AEW. Fridays is different, SmackDown, even though we don't do Fridays. But it's really interesting to pick days and times for shows that people don't normally do. And then suddenly you see a whole bunch of people doing shows at that day and time. And then you move it to another time. And then you see some of those people move it to another time. So, you know, I have decided to do more recorded shows. I mean, I love interacting with all of you, and that will never go away. But I am going to be doing more recorded shows because they cannot try to pull, you know, people away, you know, if it's pre-recorded. Live, they could do that. They could play games. They could talk wrestling. They can cook. You know, they could talk about life. That's fine. But anyway, before I go, Mr. Cruiserweight, he is not as crazy as you think. He sent his $5 super chat. I thank you. He would like to know if the Grizzled Young Veterans were leaving AEW, these journalists and websites would be doing doom and gloom articles and tweets. I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree. But you want to know something? I don't think a lot of these elite journalists that we always talk about, I don't think they would have reported it. Because when we heard about the grizzled young veterans requesting their release, remember the tweet that one of them posted right after Stand and Deliver? Because we talked about it in the Stand and Deliver recap. We did a recap right after Stand and Deliver ended. And I said, wow, that's a very interesting tweet. You know, it felt like that they were leaving. And then the news came out that they requested their release and they were granted it. The way it was reported, it was negative. It was negative. There was nothing that, oh, they're homesick or, you know, they want to take some time off or, you know, they feel like they've done everything they could do. And no, they just posted, they requested their release and they've been granted it. And this is especially coming off the heels of Vince McMahon returning in more capacity at the request of Endeavor. We got to keep reminding people of that. With management changing and ownership changing soon, a lot of people are immediately putting the two together. So when you hear right after Stand and Deliver, and their match was a dark match, let's be honest. We even said, why the fuck are they fighting in a dark match? You know, so when that was reported, it came off as negative. They're not happy. I personally think those elite media out there would not have reported it. Because when was the last time you heard one of these elite journalists report that somebody requested their release from AEW and has been granted it? You really don't hear that. You know, like you remember a little bit of buzz about Leo Rush. You know, you hear a little bit about maybe Brian Cage wasn't happy. But when it comes to other names, you don't ever hear that even teased as a rumor. You know, you hear like Andrade wants out of his contract. And Andrade says, no, it's not true. You know, and people don't buy it because you get the elite journalists that will post follow-ups. By the way, another week, the Redeemer. He redeemed another week. Miro, once again, smartest person in the world of pro wrestling. Think about the amount of money Miro has made in AEW doing nothing. See, they can't add time onto his contract because he's not injured. Andrade, it's a little bit of a different story, as is Kenny Omega and some others, Christian Cage. You know, but when it comes to Miro, he's healthy. So this guy is getting paid to sit at home. Thank you, Cruiserweight, for the five spot. I'm going to jet out of here. Everyone, it's been real. I thank you, as always, for joining me. And don't be a stranger. If you're around, if you're up early Saturday morning at 11:05, I will be here. And then Sunday, wow, we haven't done an episode of the sit-down. It's got to be close to a month. So we'll do a sit-down on Sunday, which will be a lot of fun. And don't forget, check out yesterday's double episode that I posted. First half is the Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle show. The second half is the Don, Tony show. And great, great topics of discussion. So definitely worth a listen. Go check it out. Much love, everyone. Be well, and catch you all again soon.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a podcaster. For me to live any other way was nuts. To me, those goody-good people who work shitty jobs for bum paychecks and took the subway to work every day and worried about their bills were dead. I mean, they were suckers. They had no balls. If I wanted something, I just took it. I ran everything. I paid the bills. I paid the hosts. I even paid the masked maniac. Everybody had their hands out. Everything was for the taking. We always called each other good fellas. You would always hear from somebody. You're gonna like Don Tony. He's all right. He's a good fella. He's one of us. But if you're part of my crew, nobody ever tells you they're gonna get rid of you. It doesn't happen that way. There weren't any arguments or curses like in the movies. See, your haters come with smiles. They come as your friends, the people who claim they care the most for your life. And now that's all over. And that's the best part. Today everything is different. There's lots of action. I don't have to wait around for everything like everyone else. Oh, I didn't get the vaccine? Fuck you, vaccine me. Oh, your delivery guy has COVID? Fuck you, feed me. Right after I moved here, I ordered egg noodles and ketchup, and I got spaghetti with meat sauce. I'm no longer an average nobody, while they get to live the rest of their lives like a bunch of schnooks.